Right now, we have a very special guest. Very interesting fella, Ted Sedell, Edward Sedell. First, let me say, and I should have, this is Dave Gahary reporting on the corner of Wall and Fraud. Ted Sedell was born in Trinidad. His mom is from Trinidad. His dad is from Rye, New York. He was murdered in Africa. His dad was a gerontologist working with a reporter from Reuters investigating the murders during the first 6 months of Idi Amin's rule. You remember Idi Amin, of course. And he was working in the bush in Africa, in Uganda, and he was murdered, I guess, alongside that reporter. Well, Ted did not go into medicine like his dad. He went into the world of Wall Street, and he was an attorney also. He worked for the Securities and Exchange Commission for 3 years in Washington, D.C. Graduated summa cum laude, like last week's guest, Dom Amorosa. And he left the Securities and Exchange Commission after 3 years. And he was working on a project for the Tennessee Pension Fund. And he uncovered something that was disturbing. And that was the fact that a broker that he was investigating, he was unable to find information out about. And that brought him to the system that's in place to this day, where brokers across the country are allowed to cover up their past indiscretions. So if you're looking for a broker, if you want to go out and find a broker to invest your money with, this particular broker may have committed a felony. And the organization that registers the broker's information can legally hide that information from you, preventing you from making the right choice about who you want to deal with. Now, we're going to start from the beginning with some initials, some names, some organizations to apprise our listeners of exactly what's going on. But the fundamental fundamental fact here is that if someone wants to invest money in the markets and they want to deal with a broker, the information that you would need to make the right decision is not available to you. And it actually has been upheld in the courts that they are allowed to hide this information from the public. Believe it or not, I mean, it sounds like something ridiculous, but it's absolutely true. And I'd like to bring Ted Sedell on the line with us. Ted, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, Dave.
All right. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Ted, now, it's an amazing thing that investors are not allowed to find out the backgrounds of these brokers, but can you run us through exactly how that happened?
Well, most people are probably not aware that the brokerage industry has been allowed to self-regulate, self-insure, and self-adjudicate since before the time of the creation of the federal securities laws. The brokerage industry was a small club down on Wall Street. So when the laws were enacted, the lawmakers decided to allow the industry to continue to regulate itself. And this has continued to even through today, where the industry is regulated, self-regulates, subject to SEC oversight, and the amount of oversight the SEC brings to bear sort of reflects the current political environment.
Okay, so what you're saying is that they're allowed to police themselves?
Yes.
There's so in other words, it's the proverbial fox guarding the hen house?
Yes. Unlike insurance companies, banks, and mutual fund companies, for some reason, the brokerage industry is allowed to police itself. And I always ask the question, is this because we believe brokers are inherently more trustworthy than insurance agents or banks? And I think the answer to that is no. But
right.
This is historically how the industry has been allowed to operate.
That's, I mean, and of course, that's the age-old question: is why are they allowed to self-regulate? And you would have to go back to the creation of the Securities and Exchange Commission in the early 30s. It does seem rather ridiculous that Wall Street is allowed to police itself in light of all of the scandals that have engulfed the industry. But be that as it may, they can self-regulate. They can self-insure, you said?
Yes. When you walk into a brokerage firm, the first thing you have to do is sign, when you open an account, is you sign an arbitration agreement, what's called a mandatory arbitration agreement, which means if you have a problem with your broker, you've got to go to a legal proceeding controlled by the industry, an NASD arbitration.
And what is the NASD? What does that stand for?
National Association of Securities Dealers.
And what are they?
What are what?
What is the NASD?
Oh, the NASD is an association of brokerage firms that has a part of its task is to promote the interests of the brokerage industry.
Right.
And another part of its task is to, they're supposed to protect investors from themselves.
Right. So the NASD, the National Association of Securities Dealers, is the trade association for the brokers.
Yes.
Okay. So what that means is that all the stockbrokers across the country, they're members of the NASD, and the NASD attempts to influence public policy and regulations through the dues and the fees that are submitted to them by the brokers across the country.
Yes.
And they're going to work in the best interest of the brokers and, as it turns out, against investors.
Well, they're not supposed to.
They're not supposed to, but they do.
They're supposed to protect investors, but of course they don't. I mean, because that's not who their membership consists of.
And this scam has been allowed to go on ever since the creation of the NASD, which is the largest self-regulating body in the country.
Yes. And in fact, the NASD, in its advertising, says that they are there to protect investors, to restore confidence among investors.
That's good.
For many people, they believe that the NASD is an investor advocacy group, but in fact, it's not.
Right, it's a trade association.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so you you did some investigative work, and you're an attorney,
yes.
As I stated earlier. You did some investigative work for Tennessee's pension fund.
Actually, it was the city of Nashville.
City of Nashville, and you were looking into the background of a particular broker, and you could not find out what you needed to find out in order to do your job in the investigation. And what you came to realize was that this information that was vital for these pension funds, for these institutional investors, and for individuals to have wasn't available. Is that correct?
That's correct. The system is riddled with so many loopholes and exceptions. The disclosure system, the NASD's disclosure system, which I sometimes refer to as a system of mass deception.
System of mass deception, that's good.
But it has more seriously, it has so many loopholes and so many exceptions that when you try to uncover the background about the broker you're dealing with or you're investigating, you can't be at all assured that the information you're getting is complete.
So in other words, if my friend here, Bernard White, wanted to invest some money in Wall Street and he wanted to find a broker, he could go online and could he investigate the broker?
Well, he can, but the first thing he does, he goes on to the NASD system online, but the first thing he has to do is agree to what's referred to as a click agreement, which is an agreement that restricts how much information he can ask for and what use he can make of that information. And this is what Susan Bucklew, the federal judge Susan Bucklew, late October decided that the NASD could have. She upheld the click agreement and said that the NASD can restrict public access,
right,
and public use of.
I want to get to her in a little bit, but I wanted to ask you. So in other words, any individual American investor or would-be investor who would want to investigate the past of their broker or even a brokerage firm has to agree to some restrictions?
Yes.
So in other words, if I wanted to pick a doctor to have surgery, I mean, that's kind of an important thing. You know, I want to have surgery and I want to investigate this doctor. That's similar to the Doctors Trade Association, the American Medical Association, covering up information about the past practices of the doctor.
Yes. I mean, what it amounts to is what the NASD has said, you can ask for a limited amount of information for your personal use, and they will give it to you. If you ask for anything they deem to be repetitive or unreasonable request for information, they can deny you. Or if you request the information for any purpose that they're uncomfortable with, such as if you're a member of the press and you request information, they can deny it by saying the purpose for which you're using it is impermissible. The only purpose they allow is personal use, and you can only ask for one firm at a time. So you couldn't compare whether your broker looks good vis-a-vis another broker or 10 other brokers in your town. You could only look up your one broker.
Right, that's
and
why
it could only be for your personal use.
That's why I always explain to people that they're much better off doing their own homework and not dealing with anybody and creating their own mutual funds by buying their own stocks if that's what they're so inclined to do. So what happened was you worked for Nashville for their pension fund. You saw that you couldn't get the information, and you actually went about putting together a directory of practices in the industry. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that's called the Sedell Directory. And could you explain a little bit about that? And also, what happened when you wanted to just get this information, which was publicly available, which was put together by state securities regulators, what did you come up against?
You know, the Sedell Directory of Securities Dealers gives the criminal and disciplinary history of every brokerage firm in America. There are approximately 5,400 brokerage firms in the United States. So we have it in the book, which is massive. I mean, it's 1,700 printed pages plus approximately 200,000 pages on CD. What we found in the book when we downloaded all the publicly available information was that 85% of the information regarding these firms is not publicly available.
85% of the information is not publicly available.
Correct. Only 15% of, less than 15% of all the arbitrations, lawsuits, if you will, involving these firms are properly disclosed.
And why
less
is that?
Than 15%.
Why is that?
Because, first of all, the system requires the brokers to self-report. So when a broker gets sued, he's supposed to input into the system the fact that he's been sued. Of course, it's in no one's self-interest to do that, so vast majority of brokerage firms simply don't report that they've been sued. And then beyond that, there's so many exceptions to what has to be reported that that basically whittles down the number further still.
So, in other words, that's like if you or I were driving along the road and we got a ticket and we could, you know, self-report that ticket to DMV. Is it similar to that?
Oh, it's worse than that. It's you're driving down the road, you break the law, you're supposed to turn yourself in to get the ticket, and then you're supposed to report the fact that you've been ticketed. Because the law enforcement mechanism here is the industry itself. So the brokerage industry is supposed to give itself tickets, and then it's supposed to report to the public that they've given themselves a ticket.
But it doesn't.
No.
And so when you started to do the research for your directory, what else did you discover besides that?
Well, what we discovered was that the vast majority of these disciplinary actions are not reported, and that even cases involving tens of millions of dollars of malfeasance aren't reported. So it was clear that unless you hire an investigator like me at a cost of several hundred thousand dollars, investors weren't getting this information. So that's when I decided to basically investigate the NASD's disclosure system and write a book that anybody could use to do a due diligence on the brokerage firm.
To make an informed choice.
Exactly.
Right. So they actually paid you several hundred thousand dollars, Nashville, to do this investigation, and you realized that it would make more sense if this information was available to everybody instead of, for example, you were tied up for quite a while, I would imagine.
Yeah, it took me about 3 months.
3 months doing this investigation. So you put together this book, and I guess the NASD found out about it, and they weren't too happy?
Well, as a former regulator, I was formerly with the SEC. I wrote to the NASD in advance telling them that I would propose to publish this book, and I asked for the information on a CD disc, or what I refer to as enhanced access. Give it to me on a disc so I don't have to hit your system requesting all the information. They wrote back to me saying initially that while they didn't have any problem with my accessing the database to get the information I needed for my book, they wouldn't give it to me on a CD. They wouldn't give me enhanced access. I would just get routine access like any other investor.
Right.
So I then hired a programmer, and we downloaded all the information, and we had four publishers interested in publishing the book, and we told the NASD we're about to publish, and they sent a letter. I think it was Friday night, February 22nd at 10 o'clock at night. They faxed us a letter saying, if you publish the book, we'll sue you.
And you still went ahead and published the book?
Yes.
And did they sue you?
No. We self-published the book because we could not contractually guarantee a publisher that we could get the information going forward. When you get into a publishing deal, the author represents to the publisher that he has all right, title, and interest to the information and can make it available going forward on a timely basis. And since I couldn't do that, we were forced to self-publish the book. And the NASD did not seek an injunction to stop publication.
And why do you think that was?
Because I think that would be very difficult in a post-Enron environment for the NASD to seek an injunction.
Right, right. Now, this matter actually did go in front of a U.S. district judge in Florida.
Yes.
And what did that judge decide?
What we did is we asked the court, we sued for what's called a declaratory judgment, which was we wanted the judge to say that this is public information that the public has a right to see, and that no one could, by click agreement or any other form of contractual restriction, keep this from the public. We asked for a declaratory judgment to say that. What the judge said was that the NASD could restrict public access to the information by this click agreement, and any public policy issues that might raise were not significant in her mind.
So, U.S. District Judge in Florida decided that the National Association of Securities Dealers, the NASD, which is the trade association for all the brokerage firms and brokers across the country, could restrict information from the public.
Yes. Both public use and both restrict the flow of information and the use of that information.
Why do you think that a U.S. district judge did that?
Well, I think the judge had to be significant leanings that were pro-business, because there's no, in a post-Enron environment, I don't think any rational person would choose to withhold from the millions of defrauded investors around this country access to this information. It is public information. It's information such as whether the SEC has sued Smith Barney, information such as whether the state of New York has sued Smith Barney. If that's not public information that the public has a right to, I don't know what is.
I just don't get it. I mean, like so many things with Wall Street, I don't understand. So what's the status of that judge's ruling? Is that matter dead now? Or?
No, we filed a notice for appeal, and the case goes to mediation very soon, in the next couple of weeks, I think. It's a case that I think securities lawyers around the country are in agreement that it should have at least gone to trial. I mean, she granted, the industry filed in response to our request for a declaratory judgment a motion to dismiss. The judge granted a motion to dismiss. That means she decided there was no issue here that was worthy of going to trial.
Incredible. And you, in fact, have spoken to many attorneys, and not one of them thought that that was the right thing to do. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's usually some disagreement on issues, but this is one issue that no one, no securities lawyer would ever, has ever indicated any agreement with the judge on. I mean, this is public information.
That's incredible. They're in effect locking the public out from information that is vital to their decision making, and I just don't understand it. I don't know how Wall Street can get away with this, but they've been doing it since 1792, and it's amazing. But
I don't think it does anything to boost investor confidence. I hear a lot of talk about how people want to boost investor confidence and nudge people back into the equity markets. Well, I think that stonewalling on disclosure is hardly the way to do that.
I agree with you 100%. Ted, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and I want to give people your web address. It's www.benchmarkalert.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Benchmarkalert.com. And go take a look at it. And this is an amazing story. It's happening right under our noses. We are not allowed to get public information about a broker's disciplinary history, and a federal judge in Florida has determined that that is the case. It's incredible. Ted, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dave. Take care.
You too.